Okay, last time we divided the first half of Sefer Bereishit into two parts based on the structure as it appears in Chumash. The two parts that we created, we put up on one of the smaller boards. We have Bereishit. We have the first part, which we defined as creation. And the second part, which we defined kind of loosely as...
Doom.
No. Well, yeah. Ricky's not here. As what we called something clearly having to do with humanity in Gan Eden, something going on there. We weren't sure what, and we're going to continue to come back to that over time. For today, what I want to focus on is this piece, is the creation. In the first seven paragraphs, we have the seven actual days of creation. The Sheshet Yimei Bereishit, this is called, or the 7 days of Bereishit. The 6 days of Bereishit concludes in the seventh, which is Shabbat. The Torah is very particular in terms of everything. The Torah is soaked with meaning in terms of every layer. And the same way that we talked about how if the Torah is called Chamisha Chumshei Torah, if it's defined as the 5/5 of Torah, then somehow, some way, at some point, we would have to define why 5 and what each individual piece is in the context of 5. So, what does it mean that this opening piece of Briyat HaOlam is comprised of a process of 7? That's the primary question that I want to address today, that I want to try to get into today. What other processes are we aware of that are also processes of 7?
Shemitah.
We're going to call it encircling.
Sphera.
Which has many different meanings in and of itself. Yeah.
Shabbat
meaning?
Sunday.
Right.
That's right. 7 days up to a
every week. That's really 8, and it's a whole different Torah on what the 8 means there, yeah.
How many days are there when someone dies when you're in Avel?
Shiva.
Shiva. Is it also 7? Oh, Shana Brachot.
Elutes. Oh. Shiva Brachot. Yeah?
Oh, the 7 fruit.
Shiva. What do you mean?
Thanks.
You know, these are all kind of things that we take for granted when we're in the middle of them as either a time or a thing itself. But if the Torah is consistently coming back, and these are only some examples, there are a lot more, consistently coming back to the number 7, 7 must be essential on a Torah level. 7 must be integral on a Torah level. In terms of process, the creation story here is clearly a process of 7. What, Ella, was that you who said every week? You said every week. Esther, that was you. Every week, that opens up a direct parallel in terms of process and time. We have the creation story itself, and then we have every week, which is sort of a microcosm of that creation story. We have 7 days in each week, like there were 7 days in creation itself. That's on the microcosmic level. When we look at Chazal, it's not just each week, which exists as a process of 7. It's in fact the totality of history itself, which also acts as a process of 7. How so? So first of all, when we look at the Torah itself is not just a book that's limited in terms of the time that it's relating to. We often think of the Torah as being a book which was given to Bnei Israel at a certain point in time. It was given to us in the desert. And so because of the way that the text presents itself, we often think of Torah, or rather, we often think of there being a world. The world is created, and then in that created world, the Torah is given to us at a particular point in history. All of the sources in Chazal indicate that that's not the case. While the Torah was given to us in the form that we have it at a particular point in history, there's a Medrash in the beginning of Bereishit Rabbah, a very famous Zohar. It's exactly the same words, just one is in Hebrew and one is in Zoharic Aramaic. The Zohar phrases it as Estakel Be'oraita Uvara Alma. I believe that the Medrash phrases it as HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mabit BaTorah Uvara Ta'olam. It's the very opening Medrash in Medrash Rabbah. But Estakel Be'oraita Uvara Alma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mabit BaTorah Uvara Ta'olam means that on a certain level, the Torah predates creation itself. And in fact, that Medrash goes at length to use a mashal, that the Torah is like the blueprints of the master builder, the construction worker, who uses that blueprint to create the world. And there's a lot to unpack in terms of what that means. But even on the simplest of levels, the Torah, in its spiritual essence, is preceding creation. And all of creation itself is a reflection of Torah. So creation exists within Torah. It also is given to us at a certain point as a book, as a text. But in its spiritual essence, at its core, it predates creation. Yeah.
So in other words, you're just saying it's timeless.
Yes, exactly what I'm trying to indicate. That's a great word. Let's put that out there. The Torah is timeless. And that has a lot of layers of meaning. It means that it relates to all different times. It means that I relate to it no matter where I'm at. And it means that it covers all of history. That's a fantastic word.
It covers all of history and future.
Good. So let's see how that even appears in the text. Where does the Torah start with? What's the first word?
Bereishit.
Where do we start with?
Beginning.
The beginning. We start at the very, very beginning. We start with Bereishit. Now here's what's amazing. Where does the Torah end? What?
Just in the last word in Torah?
Not necessarily the last word. Content-wise, where does the Torah really end?
About
to go into Eretz Yisrael, which itself, by the way, is on has multiple layers. When we talk about it and what we're saying at this time of year in Ladavid, the Eretz HaChaim, Eretz HaChaim has dual meaning there. It could mean Eretz Yisrael, it could mean Olam Haba. There's a lot of dual meanings about what it means to enter into the land of Israel as being the culmination of a process. That's on a more philosophical, theological, spiritual level. If you even want to bring it back down to the text itself, the last parsha of Vezot HaBracha is almost sort of a postscript to Torah. It's Moshe's final blessings before he passes away. The last serious content parsha before that postscript is Parshat Ha'azinu. Many, particularly the Ramban, note the fact that Ha'azinu is the song of history. Ha'azinu is the story of history. And if you look carefully at the deep poetry of Parshat Ha'azinu, and you take a look at the Ramban, and he explains it when he opens it up there in Ha'azinu. Ha'azinu also takes us from the beginning of history, but the end of the song is the end of history. Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through Moshe Rabbeinu, intentionally concludes the Torah with the conclusion of history, to show that the Torah is, in fact, is, again, to reiterate the word, Zisi, that you pointed out, is timeless. We end with Ha'azinu. We end from the beginning of history all the way to the end of history. That's the goal. That's the presentation of Torah. That's the Torah encompassing and embodying all of history within it. Yeah.
Is it timeless up until, like, Geula? Like, do we believe that within our Torah, right? Like, it's the blueprint to, like, our history and our future. Do we believe that within the Torah it's also about Geula future? Or up until Geula?
That's a great question. Let's deal with it offline. But it's a great question. There are sources in our hidden, more hidden tradition that indicate that things go further than that. How that's reflected in Torah, where that's reflected in Torah, is a conversation for a different time, a different place. But at least in terms of what we have, history as it presents itself, history as we have it, that's going to be represented in taking us from beginning to end. But it's a great question. Good. What's additionally meaningful about that process is that, again, everything is all tamun, everything is all hidden within, everything is all embedded in with the beginning. Our sources in Kabbalah point out that the first man, where everything starts from, man as even exists as man and woman together. If you take Adam, Adam can act as an acronym. Adam can act as an acronym for the three stages of history. Adam, the middle or the centerpiece of history, which is the time of David HaMelech, where Jewish history reaches its pinnacle, where we get to a point, we're at the highest point of our history, we're about to build the Beit HaMikdash, we're about to reach a certain level that we will never reach again, the heights of David HaMelech. After that, we decline, we go back to Galus, things start to move into the second half of history where things move downward, everything builds up to David. Where does everything conclude?
Mashiach.
Exactly. That this is all already hinted to in Adam, the totality of history.
Wait, I don't understand. Can you explain why it's
on? If anything that starts something off, anything that's the Rosh has to have everything in it, it's very timely coming up to Rosh Hashanah. Why do we put so much emphasis on Rosh Hashanah? Because Rosh Hashanah, if it's the Rosh, if it's the beginning, if it's the source, it has to contain the seeds of everything that comes afterward. And we see even in the word that is the first person, that is the story of humanity, we see the totality of human history already encompassed within him. Chazal also point out that the 70 years of David HaMelech's life come from Adam, that Adam only lived 930 years, and he gives 70 years to David. Why David? It's an extension of him. It's the continuation of history, which culminates in Mashiach ben David, and then suddenly coming all the way around in full circle.
So why doesn't Rosh Hashanah then around like Simchas Torah time, when we start the Torah, when we start the beginning again?
I would fine-tune your question, which is, why is it that Rosh Hashanah and Kippur takes place after the first of Tishrei? Or after, why doesn't it take place after Sukkot? That's a Chagim question. It's a very deep question. It has some really beautiful answers, but that would take us very far away from Bereishit. But also, excellent thinking and great questions. We're just going to keep it local. Okay? Keep asking them, but if I push them off, it's not because they're not good. It's because they're going to pull us too far afield. Okay? Now, if we're saying that the Torah spans all of history, and in fact, that's even hinted to in the very creation process, then history should also follow the structure of creation. Chazal tell us in both Masechet Sanhedrin and Masechet Avodah Zarah that exact fact. The phrase that's used, we're running out of board space, but I'll start writing small like this, is Sheet Alfei Shnin Havei Olma. Our sources tell us that the world is 6,000 years long, which then goes into the Elef HaShvi'i, the last group of 1,000 years, which is Yemot HaMashiach. That there's three distinct, they divide into three distinct stages of 2,000 years, 2,000 years, 2,000 years, and 2,000 years. The way that it's broken down is 2,000 years of Tohu, 2,000 years of... What?
Isn't it Talmud Torah?
Yes, that's the second 2,000 years, 2,000 years of Torah. And then 2,000 years of Yemot HaMashiach, somehow a build-up process of Yemot HaMashiach. The 2,000 years of Torah, by the way, if you ballpark it, it's within a very narrow scope, that 2,000-year mark comes with the beginning of Jewish history, which is with Avraham Avinu. If you work out the years, it actually comes out at exactly that point, basically. But there's a 6,000-year process that's taking all of history throughout. What that leads us to, if we bring it back, is that there are really three parallel processes in terms of seven as a mode of process on a historical level. There's the initial creation. We'll put it under here, even though there's the initial creation. There's creation as a paradigm for all of history. That's on the macrocosmic level. And then on the microcosmic level, there is, Esther?
Every week.
Every single week. They're all processes of seven, and they all parallel each other.
Wait, did you say how they parallel each other?
So that's the next question. When we see things that parallel each other, when we see things that share a structure, the immediate question to ask is, what is the content of that? What are all three of these things? I actually used the word already. At the very least, they are a process. There's a process of creation. There's a process of history. There's a process of the week. And if we want to stick with the word here, it's a process of... it's a process of creation. Something is being created at each stage. How would we define what's being created over the process of the 7 days at the beginning of Chumash?
The world?
The world, the physical world. The physical world is being created over those 7 days. And we see the culmination of that process at the end of six. If we take a look at Perek Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. At the end of the sixth day, Vayar Elohim et kol asher asa v'hine tov me'od. God gives his seal of approval. Creation has ended. We've created what we've set out to do. And then that takes us into Shabbat, which is somehow beyond the creation, somehow the cap of creation. We'll get back to that in a moment. Process of six leading into seven. So if the creation process is what's happening in number one of the physical world, what's happening on a historical level?
The legacy of the
world. Start with the word creation. What are we trying to create? What's the, it's the creation of?
The
perfection of?
The world of people, of our nation, Jewish people.
Good. You going to say something? Correct. Great. 100%. 7 days of creation are the process of the creation, the completion, the perfection of the physical world. History is then, as you intuitively jumped to, the creation, the process of creation, the process of perfection of humanity.
But does it have seven?
It's 6,000 years of process.
Why is it perfection, though?
Yeah.
The goal is to lead to perfection. That's why we get to the end of the sixth day. V'hine tov me'od. God gives his full seal of approval by the end of six. Then we lead into Shabbat.
Is that having anything to do with spirituality? Is that like the process of creation of spirituality? Because if the first one was world, was physical.
Good. We have to figure out how to define humanity. And not surprisingly, that's actually our word that's sitting here.
Yes.
In terms of the retelling of the story, we're going to have to get into that more deeply as we go forward into the second half of the first half of Bereishit. Right? We've now opened up a whole world of why this might be here, why there's more to discover, why there's more to interact with, that we need to go back and reevaluate the sixth day and the creation of man in particular, and why that might be separated from the creation story. But we'll get back to that, 100%. Yeah.
So then the week, as like the microcosm of creation, is our perfection of ourselves individually?
Excellent.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't understand that. I thought we were supposed to like emulate God. And like, I don't understand the perfection piece.
Of what?
Of why history, the creation, is why the creation of the 6 days is for us to like perfect ourselves up until seven.
You're jumping to step number three like Bracha did also. Yes?
No, I'm confused. I don't understand the perfection thing you're talking about.
The indication of a seven-day process of creation of the physical world, and the fact that God says, Ki tov, ki tov, tov me'od Shabbat, indicates to us that creation is the creating something to its final point, is a process.
He says that after every single day. Said Hashem.
He says tov, not tov me'od. He never gives his final seal of approval until the end of the sixth day.
Oh, tov.
I'm sorry that I didn't emphasize that clearly enough. That's suddenly the language changes. Ve'alokim ki tov, ve'alokim ki tov. V'nei tov me'od. And now I can stop and move into Shabbat. That there's a process of moving toward perfection of something, and then the process of Shabbat as the culmination of that process, which we still haven't defined yet. So the creation of anything in its fullest sense, in reaching its perfection, is going to follow the ultimate paradigm which is already embedded into the creation of the world itself. If it's the creation or the perfection of humanity, it'll take place over also a process of six leading into seven, 6,000 years leading into a 7,000th group of years. And we'll get to what Bracha jumped to, which is the personal piece, in a moment. Somebody else had a hand. Yeah.
I understand that creation becomes perfection, but then how's history have to do with that?
So if history takes place over the same span of 7,000 years, instead of one, it's 1,000. Instead of two, it's 2,000. It's taking place over a process of seven.
History is also going to culminate in perfection.
It has to be a process that's trying to strive to the perfection of something. And what was defined, and Zizi defined as that something, it's the perfection of humanity. The physical world was perfected by the end of the sixth day going into the seventh. The process of humanity is developed over the course of the 6,000 years, reaching into the group of 7,000 years. Any other thoughts? Reflections? Good? The practical implications for us are number three, which is that every week also follows a process of seven. That's reflected in the pasuk, Ki shish damim ta'avod v'asita kol melachtecha. That means that if our weeks are structured, if every single week is structured as a process of seven, as a six leading into the seventh, the implication for us is that every single week is meant to be a creative process where we're striving to attain greater levels of perfection. Nobody's expected to reach perfection in a week, but where every week is meant to be, at its core, at its heart and soul, is meant to be a striving for perfection. Ideally, every single week of a Jew's life is meant to be as creative and as productive as possible. That's the goal. When we look back at a week, we have to think about, how did I grow? How was I creative? What did I produce? How did I grow in terms of my knowledge, in terms of my character traits, in terms of my interactions with other people, in terms of my sense of self, my identity, my relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my Avodat Hashem. Every week is defined by the creative elements of that week, by the production of that week. Yeah.
So do we think because it's like Shabbos Yom Menucha, or Menucha is like reflecting? Is that what our Menucha is? Like not producing but reflecting?
Yes. I mean, I feel like people think that I planted it in the crowd. But yes. The idea there is that what Shabbat is a celebration of what we created. Shabbat Bereshit is a celebration of the culmination of the process of creation of the physical world. The end of history is a culmination of the process of what we've created as humanity, the perfection we've attained as humanity. And Shabbat, the significance of Shabbat in all of our lives, then, is no more and no less than what we've produced over the course of our week. The more I'm creative, the more I produce, the greater my Shabbat. The less creative I am, the less I produce during a particular week, the less significant is my Shabbat. But my Shabbat is no more and no less than my creative process. The Shabbat of Bereshit is no more and no less than what HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into creation. In the same way, history is no more and no less than the perfection that humanity attains. The The same way that the way that Olam Haba is described, Olam Haba at its core is not going to be any more, any less than we put in. Olam Haba is an experience of being able to reflect upon and internalize and become, experience, everything that we've worked to become over history. What we experience in Olam Haba is no more than no less than we produce in Olam Hazeh, than our creativity in Olam Hazeh, than our growth in Olam Hazeh. That's what Olam Haba is. Every week, the satisfaction, the enjoyment, the Oneg Shabbat of the week is really coming from our productivity, our creativity, everything that we've put into the week leading up to that point. And that moment of reflection and celebration and the Oneg of Shabbat, the Me'ein Olam Haba that Shabbat is, Chazal also makes sure that they're parallel. Each Shabbat is Me'ein Olam Haba. It's a taste of the world to come. Just like the world to come will be an enjoyment of all that we have succeeded in producing, in creating collectively, so too will each week be a celebration of everything that I've personally created in my life. That's my goal. That's the process of creation. It's the contrast of creating versus being. We're meant to create for 6 days. God creates for 6 days. History creates for 600, for 6,000 years. And then we sit in a place of being on seven.
Sifi. That's what it is? I feel like being is a negative term. I was just about to ask you because, like, I feel like, people who think, Hashem created the world and then left, but, like, no, Hashem is constantly have to be actively willing us into existence, so I feel like being would just be, like, being, and that's a negative word, and then, like, creating is, like, actively willing to do new mitzvahs.
So I would say two things. One is, in Olam Hazeh, being is a negative term. We're not meant to be here. We're meant to become here. Okay. So if you're being in the place of becoming, that's not what you're meant to be doing.
But on Shabbos, we're being?
On Shabbos, we're meant to stop. What do we do on Shabbat?
Stop.
We stop. Okay. We exactly what we do. We stop and we be. I would say the second piece is that particularly in our generation, where we're constantly plugged in, being is a negative because you're not getting anything done, but that's because we've trained ourselves that when you sit and you be and you turn off all the stuff, we've lost what it means to be able to focus in the moment and take in what we've created. Silence is deafening in our generation. It's a frightening place to be. Being is frightening. Shabbos is unenjoyable for many people because A, they're not necessarily creative during the week. A lot of people like to, they may call playing video games and watching television and chilling out, doing stuff, but it's active being. So when they get to Shabbos, where you're supposed to enjoy what you've created, there wasn't much creation necessarily. And second of all, just the idea of not being connected and then enjoying where you are, being present, but really being present on Shabbos, is a lost art that we need to reconnect to. And that's and we're told it's Oneg. We're told that it's meant to be an incredibly, intrinsically pleasurable experience. To really take in what you've accomplished is an unbelievable feeling. That's the Oneg of Shabbos and the Me'ein Olam Haba. Should I hand up? Yeah, Bracha.
So just out of curiosity, if that's the Oneg of Shabbos, then why do we have the idea of, like, eating meat on Shabbos and all these other things that are supposed to give us, like, Oneg? Why is this not enough to just constitute Oneg?
Because at the end of the day, it's only Me'in Olam Haba. It's a taste of the world to come. And everything in the physical world, when we're in the physical world, everything has a spiritual root, but it also manifests in a physical reality. So on a physical level, we rest. On a physical level, we have Oneg. But all of our sources talk about how that Oneg is meant to be coming from a spiritual place. And this is where lines like this can now become beautiful double meanings. The Gemara says, Kol ha-torech be'erev Shabbos, ochal b'Shabbos. Anybody who works to cook on Erev Shabbos will eat on Shabbos. That's a beautiful line in the Gemara, very nice. You're basically telling me if I cook, I will eat. I could have figured that one out on my own, right? If I don't turn the stove on, it's not going anywhere. What does it mean? It's saying, no, if you work during the week, you'll enjoy the fruits of your labor on Shabbos. But it's using a physical description also, because if you cook during the week, you'll eat on Shabbos, but you can't cook the meat on Shabbos. All you can do is be. And if that meat is still frozen in the freezer, raw, there's no Shabbos. There's no eating. There's no oneg. It's just a physical manifestation of a spiritual reality. It's paralleling each other in the physical world. Yeah, Zizi.
If you can answer, it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but, keep asking.
If during the week it's creating, then why do we like remember Yetziat Mitzrayim every single day? Because that's not like, creating. That's not part of our week. It's part of our history.
It's remembering where we came from. We're basically being told, reach back and look at, on a historical level, the historical process of where you came from and what happened from there to here.
Why is that important on an everyday process for us?
As Shabbos being Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, first of all, it's also Zecher Lamaaseh Bereishit, because the two are paralleling each other. It's also Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. We're looking at the world's beginning and how much have I accomplished up until now. We're looking at the Jewish people's beginning and how much have I accomplished up until now. I'm looking at my Shish Yom Tavo and how much I've created and where I've gotten up until now. It's all about stopping and reflecting within the context of history and experiencing Me'ein Olam Haba.
So then is Yetziat Mitzrayim on like a more of a more spiritual level, like not just remembering Yetziat Mitzrayim, but it's remembering Hashem take like saving us from other things as well in our history, or is it?
It's the national piece of who we are as a process in and of itself. We'll open that up more over time. Last thing I'll say, and then we'll switch gears. That's what's happening here in the creation piece. It's important to note, and that's why we emphasized it last week, that it's not just creation as a process of seven as how the Torah produces it. We made note of the fact that there's a parsha p'tucha after every single day. We just talked about seven as a process. The Torah is saying, don't just think about seven as a process, but recognize that seven is comprised of very important individual units. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are all incredibly important, soaked with meaning in and of themselves. Everything about 1 is coming out on the first day. Everything about 2 is coming out on the second day. All of these numbers individually are significant. And that's going to have ramifications in every day of the week. And what Sunday means, or let's use Hebrew terms. Let's use Torah terms. Hayom Yom, by the way, now also. Hayom Rishon Beh. Shabbat. Everything is all leading up to Shabbos, even Shir Shal Yom. Hayom Rishon b'Shabbos. Hayom Sheni b'Shabbos. But each Shir Shal Yom has a different text each day, a different parak of Tehillim. It has a different identity. It has a different essence. Each number has a different essence that the Torah is telling us to reflect upon. As we move forward through Bereishit, and this is going to be a year process, we'll start opening up some of these individual numbers as well. And we shouldn't forget that that's an incredibly important process. Each number itself has its own identity, and we can't leave that behind. But for now, we've somewhat defined what seven means, why this deserves its own paragraph, so to speak, ignoring the petuchot and taking them as one unit, even though there's a parsha petucha between each one. And what our goal to start next time is to begin to figure out, how do I take the second half of the first half Bereishit, the story of what we've still left as humanity, which now again makes more sense because we see that it's a different process, sort of, and what does that mean? And how do we start opening up this sixth day? Why does it need its own paragraph? And what's the essence of creation that's happening on that sixth day that requires its own unique study and investigation? We'll pick up with that tomorrow, on Wednesday.